Hello, everyone, and welcome to The Sydneyist, a weekly conversation about the city we love. I'm Elizabeth Farrelly, and we're broadcasting here at Eastside in Paddington from the Alan Slate studio on Eastside Radio at 89.7 FM or streaming on eastsidefm.org. Tonight, we're talking heritage, we're talking theatres, and we're talking Sydney arts culture, specifically the controversial redevelopment proposal for the lovely Art Deco Minerva Theatre on Orwell Street in King's Cross, a theatre later known as the Metro. My guest this evening is crime writer, investigative journalist, former New South Wales detective, and former advisor to the Arts Minister, Don Harwin, Duncan McNabb. Duncan, thank you for being here.
An absolute pleasure. Thank you.
Duncan has written 11 books, I gather, and one of them is the 2017 Getting Away with Murder, looking at the unsolved murders of gay men in Sydney, which is very topical, of course. That's not what we're talking about today,
No.
So because we're going to get diverted if we start talking about that. That's a very big issue of the day. But let's look instead at the Minerva, right in the heart of density done well, in the beautiful bohemian milieu of King's Cross. Duncan McNabb has been passionately involved in the campaign to save the theatre from redevelopment. So, Duncan, let's start with maybe just a description of the building. It's lovely, isn't it? I mean, it's a beautiful thing.
It's a glorious piece of architecture. It's a beautiful thing to look at.
Yes.
I mean, for those who probably may not know it well, it's on the corner of Orwell Street in King's Cross. 28 to 30 is its official name. It's a piece of streamlined modern architecture, apparently, opened in 1939.
Mm.
I remember it, and I was thinking about this the other day. I remember it when my aunt took me there in 1965 to see the opening of Mary Poppins when it was a movie house in those days. And I still remember just thinking, you look it up. And back in those days, we actually had some Art Deco theatres still left.
Yes.
Most of them have been bulldozed or bastardised. I remember thinking how glorious that was, or hopefully remembering how great it was.
Mm.
Yeah, and, you know, fast forward, most weekends I wander up to the Cross to just do the weekly shopping, and I wander down Langkelly Place and stand there and just stare at Minerva.
Yes.
Or in sunset when you're going off for a glass of wine. You just look at the old girls just sitting on the corner. It's a beautiful building, even despite the clutter around it.
Yes.
It's just absolutely
gorgeous.
Well,
almost because of the clutter around it. Because
that's a good point.
That sort of higgledy-piggledy neighbourhood, and then suddenly there's that white kind of heroic presence in that funny little spot.
It's absolutely beautiful. Yeah. And even with some of the debris around it these days, you just look at it and think, wow, that would be great. And just imagine how gorgeous that would be at night, full of people, possibly the street closed off.
Yeah.
People just out enjoying themselves, theatres, bars, restaurants.
Yes.
The focal point of the resurgence of King's Cross nightlife, like what it was when it opened in 1939.
Yes. So look, let's talk a little bit about what it was like then. I mean, obviously, you wouldn't have been around at that point.
Fortunately not.
I wasn't around at that point. But it has got a very interesting history, hasn't it?
Yeah, the Minerva was, apart from it, is the exquisite design which captured the period so beautifully, and that glory of the 30s theatre culture.
Yes, and a moment of real optimism, which probably didn't last very long.
No, it sort of ended not long after it opened. And it's got buildings across the road too, the Roosevelt nightclub, which was also incredibly famous.
Yes, yes. Also best martinis.
Also the best martinis, apart from Dulce's, quick plug for my mate. It was, you see these pictures, and there are quite a lot of them online of just people clustered around there. There are pictures, for example, of Noel Coward engaging with the crowd.
He was there for the opening show, I think.
I think he was, yes. Mm. And an extraordinary piece of theatre history. Mm. Peter Finch, the great Australian actor, his first acting roles professionally were on the boards at the Minerva.
Wow. That's fantastic.
Errol Flynn had gone by that stage, but he's probably there in spirit. But it's always had this fantastic theatrical history. Later, after the war, MGM bought it.
Yeah.
And they're
the ones who turned it into a cinema?
They turned it into a cinema, and we had all the big blockbuster premieres there.
Yeah.
So it was always, and it had what a lot of other theatres in Sydney didn't have as movie houses. It had the glamour.
Yes.
And it had the glamour around it as well.
Yeah.
So in the Cross, in those days, we went for a big night out. And in the 40s, when it opened as a theatre, you could go to dinner across the road at the Roosevelt and see a show upstairs afterwards as well. And there's that wonderful picture, I think Fairfax have, of Abe Saffron being photographed staring down at the dancers on stage in the Roosevelt. That stage is long gone. But an incredible, the hub of the nightlife precinct.
And then it was also homed or host, is that the word, for the Hair, music, the musical Hair in 1972 with Marsha
Hines? Yeah, after its years as Harry M. Miller, the great entrepreneur, bought it, turned it back into a theatre, which didn't take terribly long.
Yeah.
And it was the Australian.
Because everything was still in place.
Everything was still ready to rock and roll, basically. Just remove the cameras and put some more lights in. And it was a premiere of Hair in Australia, which was groundbreaking, to put it mildly. I'd been to see Mary Poppins with my aunt, but my parents weren't too pleased to let me go and see Hair with them. Apparently that was not on. But, you know, and on stage that.
Bad influence.
Terrible. Fabulous. That great opening night. Marsha Hines is on stage. I think she was just 16. Reg Livermore was on stage. John Waters was on stage. This remarkable cast of great Australian talents, all assembled by Harry M. Miller, at this extraordinary night that pulled press in from around Australia.
Fabulous.
I may be wrong, but I think it was the first opening of Hair outside Broadway as well.
Wow.
So I think that's the case, and a big catch. And for years after that, it had great theatre. Went back to being a movie house, and I think one of the last live acts there was Ginger Rogers. And after that, she was not tapping as well as she used to.
Yes, and I think she must have been getting on.
And in a great moment of theatre, I think Eve Arden, the great actress, turned up. She was about to do her stage show. She goes on stage. She realises that the entrepreneur who's brought her out has done a runner with the cash. And there's a lovely story where the show goes on, and she pays everyone in the Minerva, all the staff in the Minerva, from her own salary.
Oh, sweet.
It's
lovely.
Yeah.
And then George Miller.
Exactly. Well, then became, I suppose, the hub of Australian cinema for a while, with George Miller conceiving and putting together the Mad Max series there.
That's pretty amazing.
And that was, I think.
So they were using it as an office space.
Office space, and also not a sound stage, but they were also filming inside, because there's a huge amount of space. Yes. And I think George had it till about 2017 when he moved out to Fox Studios.
Yeah.
So, you know, for quite a lot of years, some of the greatest Australian films conceived were in that hothouse at the Minerva as well. Yeah. So,
Including Babe.
Yeah. It's never lost that incredible focus as being the focal point for so much great theatre.
I've been inside the building only once, and that was to a party of some kind. The interior is not completely intact, is it? But the foyer is there. Is that right?
Yeah, I think the foyer.
It's an amazing space.
Oddly enough, the developers wouldn't let us in.
What a surprise.
Well, the offer wasn't on the table, let me put it politely. Most of it's still intact. They've taken the seats and all that sort of stuff out, but the there's some, I think, the proscenium, the ceilings, all
and
that
the ceiling,
stuff.
The amazing sort of striated ceiling.
All those incredibly important parts of the building are there, the fundamental and the foyer and all that sort of stuff is there. It's not, according to the experts, like Andrew Anderson, for example, the former state architect.
Yes.
It's not, there's work to be done, sure, to convert it, but it's not an onerous task. It's a wonderful task, and the bones, the important parts of the theatre, are still there.
Yes.
So it's not a huge problem.
So I'm glad you mentioned the Andrew Anderson's report, because I was reading it too, and it's really interesting, because it says, amongst other things, it says that there was a study done by Arup which said that it wasn't possible for all sorts of technical reasons, like sight lines and size of chairs and the aisles and all that kind of stuff, escape issues. It wasn't possible to reinstitute it as a theatre, but he takes issue with that, having designed the Capitol Theatre renovation in Haymarket and also the Angel Place Theatre. So he's pretty much an expert, you would have to say, and the Rosalind Packer one.
I think he did, and I think he had some involvement up in Newcastle as well.
Yes, he knows his stuff, and he says it was perfectly possible, and the seats are absolutely big enough, and the sight lines, there might be some compromised seats, but basically it would entirely work.
Yep, he had a look at it. There have been quite a number of reports. The government, in conjunction with the City of Sydney, commissioned the first one. It was about 2019 or something rather.
Yeah.
There was a subsequent one, I think 2021 or thereabouts, to bring things up to speed.
Yeah.
And then Andrew, who's been quite passionate about this project as well, read all those reports and also read what the developers are putting forward and said it just these people are right. The developers aren't.
Yes.
It has the capacity to be returned to a 1,000-seater, quite comfortable, with contemporary technology taken into place. And that includes things too, like not only seat size, but the mundane things like the right number of toilets, access for the disability access, and air conditioning.
Mm. And the, of course, it's heritage listed. It's state significant in the listing. And there's a quote from the Heritage Statement of Significance, I think it's called, which says it's of state significance for its historic, associative, aesthetic and representative values and for its rarity. Mm. And, of course, it's becoming rarer, such a theatre, as we knock more of them down. It has been architectural and cultural icon of Potts Point, Sydney and of New South Wales. And although altered, it's an exceptional example and represents the apotheosis of the Art Deco streamline modern style in New South Wales.
Mm.
That would make it pretty hard to knock down or substantially redevelop, you would think.
Yeah, they can't knock it down and they can't change a lot. But what the developers wanted to do was put a 6- or 8-story tower. good luck with that. They got the DA. I mean, the development process has actually been quite protracted, as you know better than I do. The developers acquired the site
2019, an option.
I think there was the first owner, the new owners after George Miller bought it for about $19.8 million in 2018-2019. They were going to turn it into a storage facility. They wisely decided that that wasn't going to work, so they then sold it, and it was on a long option to the current owner, Central Element, who settled, I think they eventually settled last in 2022. But the DA actually went in August 2021 and wasn't part, it was hugely modified. In March, April 2023. I mean, massive modifications to the DA, like one story they were going to excavate, not going to be done.
Is that the car parking?
Yeah, there were going to be about 3 or 4 subterranean levels, and all of a sudden they came up a little bit more, so that's not insignificant. Yeah. And the price went up hugely.
Yeah.
It was eventually passed by council in November.
Let's just talk for a moment about what the DA does actually show or involve as a proposal. So it's a hotel, essentially, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a hotel in the rooms in the tower, and I think squished where they could put a couple.
Yeah.
And the order,
is it still 70 rooms?
Something like 65 or 70.
That's an enormous number of rooms for quite a
quite a small space building. And there was always, and whilst I couldn't quite tell, some of them seemed to be a bit short on sunlight.
Yeah, well, that's what Anderson says. They look into the fly tower, which is essentially, it becomes a light well.
Yeah, you might be able to sell that as a New York view.
I think they described it as vertical garden, but it's, you know, quite vertical, probably more vertical than garden.
Yeah, it wasn't grabbing me as a luxury hotel, let me put it that way. Downstairs with the auditorium, the important part, the business end of it all, there have been a number of plans. They were going to have a bar in the basement and a large space, which...
A nightclub.
That's went away.
That's gone.
And in the old auditorium space, they were looking like they were trying to have something flexible, 250 people, and maybe we could pull it out to 400 or something or other. It looked to me as though it was sort of a small stage in a conference centre. I'm just being unkind, but that's what it looked to me as. And then I think it was the year before, 2022, early 2023, we got this remarkable thing. We're going to turn it into a glamorous Parisian-style cabaret. And I thought, really? I mean, I've worked with cabaret performers for years, and it's hard to get 50 in a room, let alone 200. So good luck with that.
Yes.
Look, it was a nice idea, but I think it was more spin than substance.
Yes.
And, you know, fast forward to November 2023, the DA is approved with a huge number, by the way, of conditions.
Yeah, yes. So, and the conditions are protecting heritage, I
suppose. Yeah, I think the council had a lot of their own conditions. The Heritage Council also, while they approved the development, the list of things that needed to be attended to or changed was quite significant. And then lo and behold, after all these years of passionate commitment to redeveloping the site as a hotel, January 2024, it's all of a sudden we've changed direction. We're going to put it on the market, and the EOI for the site, I think, ends next week.
Yeah.
Or maybe the first EOI.
That's kind of weird, isn't it? That is also a good moment to have a music break.
If the sun don't shine, it's a global curse. If the rain don't come, be a whole lot worse.
Australian musician Steve Tyson with a song called Theatre from an album entitled Wrong Train, Right Station. Sounds like the story of my life, doesn't it, really? I'm Elizabeth Farrelly with you here at the Sydneyist at Eastside Radio, 89.7 FM, in the Alan Slate studio down in the basement. We like the basement. I'm speaking with Duncan McNabb, crime writer, former investigative journalist, no, current investigative journalist.
I've got to keep my hand in.
Former New South Wales detective and former advisor to the Arts Minister, Don Harwin. So, Duncan, let's talk for a minute about the effects of this redevelopment proposal, let's call it that, or renovation, perhaps, if you're being a bit gentler. What's the effect on the building? Are they still putting... The initial proposal had these great big structural columns going through the whole lot and then extra stories stacked up on top and extra stories beneath. But some of that's gone, is that right?
Yeah, I think they're... And I'm not particularly good at these sort of things. I'd leave this to experts like you. I think the significant change from the original DA to the one that actually was passed through was that they were doing quite a lot of digging.
Yes.
A lot of excavating.
Three floors or something down.
Now the current approved DA, I think that large auditorium or nightclub downstairs is gone.
Yeah.
And I suspect the small bar might have gone. So it's probably, I think, just... down two, maybe
so
one.
It's a bit gentler than
was. It's a bit gentler.
But it's still a bad thing for the building?
I don't think it's very nice for the building, frankly. And I don't know, just from rule of thumb, I think when you start digging under an Art Deco building, there's a reasonable chance it's not going to be very happy about it.
Yeah, I think you're probably right. And so the effect on Sydney's cultural landscape is also interesting because this has 1,000 seats, which sounds like quite a lot in such a sort of squashed area like King's Cross. You know, it's very, very tight. And that's about twice the number of seats of the Drama Theatre, or half, I think, roughly half the number in the Capitol. So it's sort of intermediate theatre size.
Yeah, it's one of those interesting mid-sized theatres that has the capacity to be quite versatile. It can, for example, pick shows that are successful in the smaller venues, like the Hayes around the corner, I think 250 seats.
Yeah.
Or shows that may have toured somewhere, do regional touring, which is becoming quite a sensible idea and I think fantastic to take theatre to the country. Come back and you've got a 1,000-seat venue to fill. So it's a good size for that and it's commercially viable. Speaking to some of the theatrical entrepreneurs like Howard Panter, John Frost, they think it is quite commercially viable as a 1,000-seater. So you could feed shows into it.
Yeah.
Likewise, something that you think is of a 1,000-seater size, you could premiere it there. The smaller Broadway shows, for example, that are going to Melbourne.
Yeah.
So rather than go to Melbourne and go to something like the Comedy or something like that, yes. you've got a 1,000-seater in Sydney, and the Minerva's got that wonderful sex appeal that very few theatres has.
It does have that,
and
yes.
just at a really practical level, it's also wonderfully located for transport. You've got yes. train nearby, good buses, yeah. ferries, and lots of parking that no one ever uses because yeah. they don't like to pay for it.
And also lots of places to eat and drink and so on.
It's two of my favourite things in life. And what a wonderful bit of magic to go to the theatre and then go somewhere to eat and drink after yes. 10 o'clock. Wouldn't that be great?
Oh, absolutely. Imagine that in Sydney.
Yeah, weird. Yeah.
Yeah. Just about unheard of these
absolutely.
Days.
Absolutely.
Yeah, yeah.
Put a bit of spice back in the place.
yes. So I think the developer Central Element, who currently own the building but have it up for sale.
Yes.
Having fought for years to get it approved, they now have it up for sale. Do we know why they're selling it?
No, we don't. It was quite surprising. Well, being cynical, I wasn't at all surprised, but that's just me being me. we see, and it was earlier this year. I mean, they've been pushing really, really hard for it. And there were moments dealing with
pushing
hard for the DA. And there were some fairly interesting scrappy moments, shall we say, and discussions between the local community, government at 1.2, I remember. But January 2024, they put out a press release saying something along the lines of, due to an unforeseen shift in how we're doing business, blah, blah, blah. We're now bringing
that can happen, can't it?
Yeah, we're now bringing our focus to ultra luxury. And this is probably within about 2 months of the DA finally being granted. So, you know, must be one of those unforeseen shifts. And they're now selling it with a DA in place. I think, and this is, I don't understand property development at all, I won't even try, but talking to some really smart people who do, the back of the beer coaster calculations for a hotel weren't stacking up with something you get a great return for with any great degree of speed. You're going to have to...
Yeah,
I think one person I spoke to said it would have to be, you know, for quite a number of years, packed every night of the week and
yes.
weekend. So I have a suspicion it may not be as economically viable as the developers would have liked,
yeah.
or the hotel operator for that matter as well.
Or maybe all those rooms looking into the light well.
Looking into the light well.
Weren't ultra luxury enough.
No, no. When I read that, I was just thinking of one of those hotels you stay at in New York where they say it's a New York style of hotel and you open the curtains and there's a wall right
yeah,
in front of
right.
you.
Yeah, that's right.
How fabulous. How glamorous is this?
Very urban. And the same developer is currently doing the development of the West Olympia Theatre at Number One Oxford
Number
Street.
Number One Oxford, yeah.
Yes. And that's one that we like a bit better, do you think?
Yeah, I was sort of – it had been desolate for years. It's not – there's not a great piece of theatrical history there. And I thought, you know, it's – I don't think I'd miss it.
Yeah.
And the community, I don't think, had any great problems with it either. It wasn't a bad idea. We're going to build a hotel
yes.
with some office space, retail, yada, yada. And the plan was actually pretty good. But it hasn't been going along swimmingly either. I recall it was first mooted to open in 2021,
yeah.
then 2022, then 2023, then early 2024, and now the last time I looked, late 2024.
Okay,
it's still three and a half walls, no roof, and a bloody big hole.
Yes.
And it had some issues with damage to Busby's Ball, which is an incredible part of Sydney's heritage.
Yes.
I think that's been sorted, and I did notice a bit of action on site. But, you know, it's 3.5, maybe 4 years past delivery date. That must be hurting.
It does sound a bit painful, doesn't it?
Yeah.
So let's talk about the neighbourhood again, but King's Cross, I mean, now, because... It's, you know, when we look at Oxford Street, one of the concerns about Oxford Street, of course, is that sense that it used to be fabulous and exciting and creative and full of interesting little things, and now it's kind of a bit deadish, and people keep saying, oh, no, it's going to come alive again, or it has come alive again, but every second shop still looks empty. So it's the same. Do you think the Cross is in danger of the same kind of effect?
I think the Cross certainly is in danger of... Well, the Cross is very quiet now. It's very tame,
isn't it?
Oh, it's just boring. Oh, get out. That's the polite version. Look, I'd like to be happy. I'd be happy to see a couple of strip clubs back, frankly. It's slowly. There are some green shoots, to use that ghastly term. You are seeing a bit more life in the Cross at night. At one stage, it was just, you know, everyone was at dinner at 5:30 and home watching the ABC News at 7. You know, kill me now.
Was that COVID or was that just gentrification?
I think it was gentrification was slowly killing it. The empty nest is coming in to bore us to death.
No, and they don't want anyone to make any noise.
Noise complaint. When they built that new thing, the new building above where the old Crest Hotel used to be, the new owners of the apartments complained that the King's Cross Hotel was making a noise. The King's Cross has been a hotel for 100 years.
Isn't that existing use rights? You just say, come on. Luna Park argument.
Absurd. just nuts.
Yes.
But I think the Cross has that capacity to come back, and I'm seeing new businesses, new restaurants coming, and new restaurants that are opening after 9 o'clock at night where you can get fed.
Oh, well, let's all go and patronise them.
Yeah, there's a slow renaissance, but I think the Minerva would give it a massive kick in the back end.
That'd be great.
And it would go back to what it used to be and what it could become.
Could we see things like RBG, like those sort of big theatre, like Susie Miller Productions? Would you see those would be? I mean, that'd be really fun to be able to go to the theatre in the Cross again.
I mean, sleeping into town, very nice. Yeah. But if I could, I'm terribly biased by this, if I could stroll up to the Cross, have a glass of wine or a cocktail, go to the theatre and then go to dinner afterwards, I'd be happy.
Almost like being in a real city.
Yeah, well, it'd take me back to a geriatric moment. It would take you back to the great old days of the 80s where you could go and see the theatre, go to the opera, go to the Cross afterwards, or go to Kinsella's when Tony Bilson ran it.
I remember Kinsella's.
Food downstairs till 2, upstairs till 4, and a nightclub and or auditorium with cabaret running a show at 1 o'clock in the morning.
Who'd have thought?
I know. So I think the capacity is there. And also, you know, not only drama, also things, Sydney Dance Company shows, that sort of thing. There's a whole range of great stuff.
Yeah. So let's just talk a bit more about what you would, if you owned the building tomorrow, if you were given it, what would you do there? Would you just renovate it as a theatre and reinstate it? Or how would you change anything?
No, I'd actually just restore it back to its... I'd restore it back to 1939 with 2024 air conditioning and comforts.
Yeah.
I would probably open... There's a lovely... On overlooking Orwell Street, there's a sort of a flat section with a bit of a wall which would make a fabulous cocktail bar.
Oh, very nice.
and I'd hopefully... I'd ask the city for Sydney very nicely to close off the street completely because there's not much need for it. And turn it into this wonderful... And something I've always loved, and Budapest does it so well... Everything is uplit rather than downlit.
Yes.
And you'd have those wonderful streetscape uplit.
Yes.
And with the Minerva just standing there looking glorious. People out enjoying themselves.
And such a good name, Orwell Street, too, isn't it? That actually sounds pretty wonderful. So we should put you in charge, obviously.
Happy to take the task.
Just before we go, I just want to mention, which we should have mentioned at the beginning, which was that the original design was done by Bruce Dellett, who also designed the Anzac Memorial in Hyde Park.
That's right, yeah.
Although further work was done by some other architects as well. But that makes it especially important that we do treat the building with some respect, it seems to me. We have, as ever, run out of time before we run out of things to say. But that is a wrap. I've been speaking with Duncan McNabb, crime writer, journalist, ex-detective, ex-private investigator, ex-media advisor to Don Harwood.